America has liberated many oppressed communist countries, bringing down the Iron Curtain, tearing down the Berlin Wall, liberating millions of Muslims with the gospel. This is Issues in Education. I'm Bob Boyd.
And I'm Jerry Boyd.
Obamacare was a manufactured crisis, destroying health care for those who had it, instead of providing it for those who didn't. The invasion of illegals across the southern border is a manufactured crisis. We have 33 million illegals and more pouring through each day, and illegals will bankrupt our system. Our guest is the managing editor of WorldNetDaily.com, as well as the editor of Whistleblower Magazine, David Kapelian. David Kapelian is the author of The Snapping of the American Mind. Obama promised that he'd fundamentally transform America. What do you think he was referring to when he said that?
With all the crises going on and the border, and we have 4,500 soldiers that lost their lives trying to liberate Iraq, and now it's being turned into an Islamic caliphate and basically a terror state. If you look into the way the hard left, the revolutionary left, which is where Obama comes from, the way they work is all about crisis. This is not my opinion with speculation. This is Obama's main inspiration, Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals. Pick up a copy of Rules for Radicals and just read the first couple chapters. That's enough to get the idea that you must constantly create crises, make your opponents angry, upset, and frustrated. The hard left regards the system we have in America, the current healthcare system, capitalism, the whole free market, they regard it as so irredeemably evil, unfair, and exploitive. And they're saying America is the worst place on earth. This is what these people who are the brain trust behind the left really believe.
I think what you're saying is true. And it seems like every time we come to a financial crisis, the media reports that we want to cut off funding for Medicare, Medi-Cal, cut veterans' benefits, but they don't mention that we're running out of money and therefore we need to cut benefits to illegal aliens. You don't hear about that.
Yeah, exactly right.
The issue is not Obama or corrupt congressmen. Those are symptoms of a deeper issue, and that is a populace capable of voting for them.
Yes, that's a great point. We can sit here and complain about a utterly lawless president, but how is it possible that the American people could twice elect somebody like this as president?
Not just him, it's a congressman.
Yeah, well, the Congress is a mixed bag because you have some very good people, a few dozen anyway, and they are absolutely warriors. There are some good people like that, but not enough.
Do you think the reason Obama got in and some of these cronies is because of voter ID laws being changed or voter fraud or all these illegals that are voting for Obama?
A combination of things. Leftist media and the leftist education that's been poisoning the minds of people for a couple generations, voter fraud, all those things are true. I would say the number one factor was Barack Obama is black, or actually mixed race. He had a white mother and a black father, African father. America had slavery. It's shameful. So the power of white guilt, liberal white guilt, the fact is there is no possible way Barack Obama could have been elected had he been a white man. We have had liberals before, like Michael Dukakis and Walter Mondale and so forth, and they like barely win like one state. And those people were not nearly as liberal as Barack Obama. But Obama had the advantage of the guilt of America wanting to prove that, look, it's a lovely thing, the idea of having, I could probably name a dozen blacks that I know personally that I'd love to have as president. Dr. Ben Carson is running. The man is full of wisdom and grace, smarts, and good values. He's a Christian. Just imagine having him as president and the effect it would have on black youth.
So for every Obama who's been raised with a bitter resentment toward capitalism in America, there's a Ben Carson, born in poverty, rose above victimhood to become a famous neurosurgeon and presidential candidate.
That's what I love that Ben Carson is running, because it's showing we love black people and we have no prejudice against them. It's just we like those that stand for biblical traditional values, and Ben does.
He would be the last president that America should have had, the first black president, as a role model instead of what they got.
Do you think Obama's a Christian or a Muslim?
It's a matter of fact that he was born and raised a Muslim. That's just a matter of public record. That's not my opinion. When he was schooled in Indonesia, the Associated Press got a whole copy of his matriculation papers, his registration papers. It says right there he's a Muslim. But we don't hold things against people what they were or what their parents made them in a child, or even what they were in college. But it is a fact that when he was in college, he was a hardcore Marxist revolutionary. That's not my opinion. That's what the Marxist head who knew Obama in college, and he was the head of the Marxist organization there, he said he had to rein in Obama. Obama was so extreme. He believed in violent revolution, like traditional Marxist Communist Manifesto style revolution, as opposed to evolution, working within the system. And eventually Obama came around to working within the system, which is what he does now. He became a Illinois senator and then a United States senator and became president within the system. He's trying to change the system from within, from at the top.
Obama has, with an executive order, mandated the federal government only do business with those who approve of homosexuality. If you disapprove of homosexuality, you won't do business with the federal government. This may mean a lot of Christian organizations will go out of business.
Yeah, he has always been radically pro-homosexual. He feigned a belief in traditional marriage, as did Hillary Clinton, for a time in order to get elected, because the culture, even back 2008 America, was such that you could not get elected to the presidency if you were favoring same-sex marriage. And now it just shows how stunningly fast things have changed. A generation ago, if you suggested two men getting married, you would be regarded universally as either insane, because remember, this is something that has never existed in the history of the world at any time or any place, even in the most debauched ancient Greece or Rome or whatever. There's never been same-sex marriage anywhere. So you would have been regarded a few years ago as being either insane or sexual anarchist, so outside the realm of civilized debate that it's like an anomaly, a freak. What a crazy person to believes this. And now it's come to the point that if you don't embrace same-sex marriage, you not only are a bigot and a homophobe — there's a made-up word, there weren't enough epithets, they had to make up new words to call people, to call Christians — but now it's actually becoming a crime, like China and the Soviet Union, where you have to go to a re-education camp in order to become free in society again. This is what we're heading toward.
It really is. And we see discrimination of Christian businesses who refuse to make a cake for a homosexual couple, or refuse to photograph a wedding or provide flowers. They're discriminated against. They're the ones that are the criminals. And so it's like same-sex marriage takes precedence over our religious beliefs, our faith.
Yes, what a shame it was that the Boy Scouts caved on that point. Mm-hmm. It's a very sad thing. They were pressured, even though the Supreme Court gave them their victory on a silver platter like 10 years ago or so. It said it's a private organization, they can do what they want, and they ruled against the homosexual lobby. They did it to themselves. The corporate pressure from their board of directors, the homosexual lobby, squeezed and squeezed and pressured and pressured and pressured over the years, the gays did, and eventually they got what they wanted. Next is going to be to have adult leaders. They will not stop. Now that they have gotten the Boy Scouts to accept gays in their ranks, you're allowing young people but not adults. That's discrimination. They're going to lose that eventually.
Part of the war has been the war of words, where we call homosexuals gays. We don't call them gays. They're not gay. That's a sin, like any other sin, but it is a sin. We don't call adulterers happy people. It's sad. Yeah, okay, but in spite of all this that's happened, in spite of the fact that we have a president who seems more like an enemy to the values of this country, who doesn't seem to understand the cultural heritage of being an American but has some other vision for this country, in spite of all that that's happened, we have only 50% of the Christians that are registered to vote, and only 50% of them bother to vote. So we have very small percentage, I don't know, less than 12% or so of the people that could vote in this country refuse to vote, and pastors still are not involved. So at this point you wonder, is it too late?
No, it's not too late, but it will be too late if all the good people stay home. If all the good people say, you know what, there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, I'm staying home. The country's lost, it's too late, I'm staying home. Or, this is just for Christians, if they say, no, I'm not getting my hands dirty in politics, I'm just going to spread the gospel. Excuse me, that's an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reality is, we have a responsibility. Jesus was full of words about helping the needy, about protecting those widows and orphans. We don't do that by supporting a socialist government that's going to hold a gun to your head and take your money and give it to some crony of Barack Obama and say we're helping the poor. The Christians need to realize this is their country, and that there is an intention to make things so bad that they burn out. They're so upset when they hear the news, they can't stand it. So they turn the news off, and then that eventually turns into not knowing what's going on. They're just going to stay home and not elect anybody because it doesn't make any difference. They're all the same anyway. Not true. That is suicide. That is conceding defeat. People that say, oh, this is just like Revolutionary War time. It's not. There was no vote. We didn't say, hey, there's an election in 2 months. We can vote King George out. No, we couldn't. The only choice they had was to fight war or be a loyalist and to go along whatever the King George government did. We have a system still intact. Get active, get out there, and you know what? It's a kind of a tonic for being upset to actually get active and do something. It's like exercise for depression. You get out and do something, it's good for your soul. We cannot give up. It's the most disgraceful thing when I hear that Christians don't vote. When they have the kind of choice that we have, the stark contrast we have right now to not get out and vote, if you don't vote, don't complain. Don't complain and say, oh, things are so bad. I don't want to hear it. Because you're part of the problem.
Yeah, and for those who aren't registered to vote, Christians register to vote. And we had one assistant pastor that was asked, who are you going to vote for in a certain election? He says, well, I don't vote. He said, God will put in office who he wants to put in office. And this guy couldn't believe that the pastor of the church was feeling that way. So later that evening, that same pastor came to this guy and he said, will you help put the chairs out in the fellowship hall? Richard says, let God do it.
The pastor was saying, God will put into office who he wants. And Richard says, well, God can put those chairs away if he wants to have them put away.
Put them out, exactly. Do whatever. But
I love it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an excuse. Sorry, it's just an excuse to retreat. God will make everything happen. The Bible is full of places where good, righteous people had to actually go and fight and sometimes die in order to preserve freedom. It's just a pathetic excuse just to say, oh, well, God will make everything right. God works through people.
People's eyes have been opened, though. I think more and more people are disillusioned with Obama. They realize he does lie. That gives me encouragement that people will get out and vote for the most righteous candidate. The public schools have played a role in the demise of this culture because they have completely gotten rid of God, and consequently, so many kids are living together. They think homosexual marriage is fine.
We homeschooled our kids. Their minds and souls are intact, and they're straight-thinking people now. But yes, I think public school and then the colleges are worse. It's just insane. You're paying $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to have your children corrupted and brainwashed. It's crazy. But the way we teach everything, not just the way we teach the origins of life, but the way we teach about history and the way we teach government, psychology, are really reeking of this atheistic worldview. And then they go through 4 years at least of radically leftist atheistic colleges in this country, for the most part, are nests of radical left-wing, really indoctrination, very reminiscent of what they do in China that Mao Zedong put in place, where they basically are forming your personality and using peer pressure to get you to change the way you think and feel about very deep things. So good being evil and evil looking like it's good, and the schools having a major role in that, yes, they have a gigantic role.
They never talk about sin or evil, and so it's opposite of Christian idealism.
Remember that one girl who said her generation was incapable of discerning evil from good?
Yeah, they couldn't even make a judgment. It was after 9/11. She was in one of these elite colleges, and they were all discussing it the next day, and they couldn't come to a real conclusion about the matter. They couldn't say that the terrorists were bad. Maybe it was our fault. But she said it was scary because they had no concept of good and evil and could not make a judgment about this horrendous act.
That could only come from extreme indoctrination. Common sense tells you these people are mass murderers. You have to really be pumped full of a whole worldview that makes you sympathetic toward the terrorist and hateful toward America, which I'm sorry to say is really the worldview of the current administration. Barack Obama and the people he has surrounded himself with are people whose worldview is full of anger at America. This is Marxism 101. Capitalism is evil. That means no matter what, no matter how you try to fine-tune it, it's just plain evil and selfish and exploitive and has to be destroyed. So let me just state this as a matter of fact. There is no opinion on what I'm saying. This is all part of the public record. Barack Obama, his father was a committed communist. He was mentored during his teen years by Frank Marshall Davis, who was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party USA. That was his father figure for many years. He even says so in his own book. Then he went to college, where in his own book, Dreams from My Father, Barack Obama says that he was attracted to the, quote, Marxist racist professors. Not my opinion, that's what Obama himself says. Out of college, he goes into community organizing, created by Chicago Marxist Saul Alinsky. And then he went into politics, where he launched his political career in the living room of another Chicago Marxist, unrepentant terrorist, Pentagon bomber named William Ayers. His spiritual mentor for 20 years, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, is a Marxist. Okay, now he's elected to the presidency. And who does he appoint? Van Jones, who is a self-avowed communist. And what does Obama do as soon as he's in office? He immediately takes control of entire sectors of the American economy. Auto companies, the banks, healthcare. If this isn't socialism, socialism has no meaning whatsoever. It's a little bit scary because this is the United States of America, where people fought and died to contain the same philosophy in Vietnam and Korea.
Let me give some examples from your book, What Evil Is. Anybody in Saddam Hussein's Iraq who criticized him or his government would get their tongues cut out. In North Korea, the penalty for owning a radio is torture and life in prison just for possessing a radio in the communist workers' paradise.
What's really scarier than having people like Hitler is having an entire nation follow them. We always have crazy people, okay? But millions of people following psychopaths, that's really the more important question. We can't stop crazy people from trying to lead us astray, but we don't have to follow them.
Let me just say, the United States, you wrote in your book, has a history of personal freedom unlike any nation in history. And yet many have been taught in our universities that the self-evident truths the founders relied upon are nothing but outdated and dangerous myths.
That's right. The founders of the modern education system were Marxist socialist, and it was like termites under the foundation of our house, eating away the foundation. And in the 60s, it all came out, and we saw it, radical liberation movements, all coming from the left, sexual liberation movement, gay liberation, to the point that we now have the left is in control of education, entertainment industry, of the news media. There's no doubt about that now. And now people are finally realizing what happens when you let leftists rule, and millions of Americans are horrified. So
right.
Hopefully we can turn it around.
You know, something that's more overt and sinister is how they're drugging all these little boys today with Ritalin. That is just so sinister, really. These little kids are just fidgeting. They're doing normal little boy things. Like you said, Winston Churchill would probably have been put on Ritalin. That's evil.
Yeah, it really is. And we really don't even know long-term what we're doing to these people, the 4 to 9 million children, two-thirds of them boys, that are on Ritalin and other dangerous...
Wait a minute. Let's not rush by that. This is incredible. There are between 4 to 9 million American school children diagnosed with ADHD and who take Ritalin and other mind-controlling drugs. This is incredible. Ritalin is taken by children for this ADD and ADHD, which are conditions that did not exist until the 1980s. So you really have to wonder if it's a made-up disease.
Yeah, you have to wonder. Even if you grant that there are extreme cases where you just got to do something because it's really hurting this kid's life, but this is radically overdiagnosed and overprescribed. Actually, the U.S. Congress and many state legislatures agree with me on that because they've passed legislation saying, knock it off, you hapless school administrators and teachers who can't handle normal little boy behavior. So he doesn't want to sit still and listen to a boring teacher talk about something he's not interested in for 6 hours. And when he can't do that and he gets up and he fidgets and he walks around or he blurts out, we say, oh, well, he's not behaving properly. Excuse me, that's how little boys are meant to behave. Look, my son is 18. He's a sharp kid. He's an Eagle Scout, soon to have his black belt in karate. We homeschooled him. If he had been in public school, I have no doubt he would have been diagnosed as ADHD and wanted to be put on drugs. Straight A's, he's a smart kid. He's doing fine. He knows right from wrong. He was spared the horror of being pumped up on Ritalin because we didn't have him in school all those years.
Yeah, but isn't this a sad thing? Think how many Christians send their kids to public schools because they're supposedly free. All these kids, it could have turned out so much better with the Lord, incorporated God's ideals into their life. I mean, these kids that are homeschooled have a different mindset. Because just think how much better if you followed God your whole life.
That's how people think. They, hey, we went to public school. We turned out fine. So maybe the way they turned out is exactly why they think it's okay for their kids. They don't understand what's happening in the public school. They don't understand what's the worldview that's being pumped through that school system.
Well, the very definition of I turned out okay, what do you mean okay? From whose perspective? Would God say you turned out okay? Or is that just your own definition based on your public school education?
Exactly.
Yeah, and we also heard some other fellow say, well, I went to public school, but had I been instructed in God's ways my whole life and been Christian educated, think of how many more people might have been influenced for the gospel and how many people may not be in hell because of it.
I loved your description how you stood on a bluff in Oregon. Oregon overlooking the Pacific Ocean, and you said you breathed in that sea air and you looked at the endless ocean, looked at the seagulls, looked at the sand, and you thought, how could anybody not believe in a creator? And yet that's what schools teach. They teach kids to deny their eyes and believe what Charles Darwin says.
Quite an amazing feat. You walk out your door and you look. I live in the Pacific Northwest. I'm looking out my window right now. I'm seeing these big, huge trees. Try to explain to me how the tree came about. I didn't make it. You didn't make it. My parents didn't make it. The whole idea of evolution, which is so counterintuitive, that's not what we see. It's not even scientific. Underneath all the scientific posturing, you're talking about a fairy tale for adults who just don't want to believe in God.
Oh, that's well put. I like the way you said that. And kids are being taught this. And so I would say one of the most evil things that ever happened is for schools to take away their Christian kids' beliefs and values, to take away their patriotism and their love of God. I loved your quote by Marcus Cicero, the great Roman statesman. 2,000 years ago, he foretold the decline of Rome when he said these words, "A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive the treason from within, for a traitor appears not as a traitor, yet he rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly in the night to undermine the pillars of the city." And I'm afraid many of our public schools are doing that. They're undermining kids' beliefs in patriotism and love of God.
You know, I appreciate you guys because you have evidently read the book. A lot of hosts have not read the book, but you're like reading all these really nice passages from the book. I appreciate that.
In fact, on page 85, let's talk about God for a minute. When I say God, I'm not talking about an impersonal cosmic being, a remote, vague, higher power, but I'm talking about the living God who created the universe with its elegant solar systems and exploding fireballs and further away from us than we can ever understand. I'm talking about God, the one who fashions all matter out of miniature, tiny solar systems. Each drop of water, each particle of dirt, each snowflake is composed of trillions of tiny moons or electrons orbiting tiny planets or atomic nuclei. Do you remember that part?
Yes. Oh, well, keep going. I love science, things orbiting other things, the moon around the Earth and Earth around the sun and all that. But that's the same thing going on down at the atomic level. Little moons going around little planets. We call them electrons going around nuclei. So it's like, it's just a little, I tend to think that worship, another name for worship is just appreciation. I think the highest form of worship for me is just a genuine appreciation for God and what he does, and that he can go and effortlessly spin this creation into existence, that a single blade of grass or a dandelion has more complexity in it. If you go right down to the atomic level and all the things spinning around everything else and the patterns there, that is more complex, that one blade of grass, than all of the supercomputers in the world combined. All the technology we have combined does not equal the complexity of a blade of grass.
Elizabeth Barrett Browning put it this way, every bush is a burning bush, like Moses in front of the burning bush in Exodus chapter 4, aflame with God.
Well, that's beautiful. We really do walk past miracles and we don't recognize them. We need to have a nice dose of appreciation for God to kind of recharge our batteries so we can go in and make some sense of all the craziness in our world and make a difference, at the very least, to kind of protect and guide our families and take our country back, because it's really sorely in need of being taken back.
Basically, it is the schools, because as Lincoln said, the philosophy in the classroom in this generation will be the philosophy in government in the next. And that's what we're seeing play out. All of this socialism, all of this corruption of the morals, it all began in public schools. We started this program.
The progressive takeover of public education, Dewey and Thorndike and that whole crowd, basically a bunch of people that didn't believe in God. And when you don't believe in God, things that seem crazy seem sane, and things that seem sane seem crazy. And that's the kind of people that took over public education.
If people in this country want to have a real revolution, make it an education revolution where the Christians educate their own children, that would bring a true revolution.
Yeah, amen to that.
Give us a conclusion.
Don't be upset and angry no matter how bad things are, because that's what the people in the grip of evil want. We're here to live unto God. If we do, we're going to have the best influence we possibly can on our country, and we're going to think straight, we're going to have energy, we're going to be a good example. And even if the worst case scenario, things get darker, we can still live unto God and be happy and live a righteous life. So you win either way.
Live unto God. Our guest has been David Capellan, the author of The Snapping of the American Mind. Picture in your mind the soldier at Valley Forge as he holds his musket in his bloody hands, barefoot in the snow, starved from lack of food, wounded from months of battle. He stands with fire in his eyes and victory in his breath. He looks at us now in anger and disgust, and he tells us, I gave you a birthright of freedom, and now your children graduate too illiterate to read it. I fought in the snow, barefoot, to give you the freedom to vote, and you stay home because it rains. I left my family destitute to give you the freedom of speech, and you remain silent on critical issues because it might be bad for your business. My question is, what will we do now to preserve the freedom that he bought with his blood, sweat, tears, and sacrifice?
If you would like a CD copy of today's program, please ask for number 1445, Calling Evil Good and Good Evil Part 2. That's number 1445, Calling Evil Good and Good Evil Part 2. The CD also includes last week's program, Part 1. And you can order a CD copy of this program from our website. Our website is issuesineducation.org. That's issuesineducation.org. Or for credit card orders, you can call us at 928-776-0000. That's 928-776-0000 from Galatians 1 verse 10. Am I now trying to win people's approval or God's? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ.